Good afternoon, everyone. I am John from the University of Washington, and I'm not in the job market. That seems to be the defining characteristic this conference. So I'm going to describe work I've done with Fang Yu, Yinglian Zi, and Martina Badi at MSR Silicon Valley, where I interned last fall, and with Arvind Krishnamurthy, my advisor at UW. IR port seems to be a little low. Okay, so we can think of the whole malware process as a pipeline. It's pretty streamlined. It's a nice process they have here. And since a lot of the attacks these days are happening through web servers or through browsers, attackers now have an incentive to kind of host their malware on websites so that visitors who visit them kind of get compromised or get social engineered. So you can think of the set of steps involved in this as the following. You know, first, attackers need to find vulnerable web servers on the internet. Then they go ahead and compromise these servers, host malware or any other files they wish on these servers, and then spread links to this malware so that people can visit them. And once you get infected, all sorts of bad things happen, right? And in this talk, we're going to focus on the spreading aspect of it. So. Traditionally, malware links have been spread through spam emails or spam instant messages. More recently, you've seen things going on social networks or, as a previous talk also revealed my spoiler, through search results. And in this talk, I'm going to look at how search results are poisoned and how the whole process of spreading malware works here. Okay, so unfortunately, I also have a screencast. So some of my thunder is stolen, but hopefully this shows you something different. Like, so here I'm going to search for Flintstones pictures in MySpace. They are a band. And Google helpfully auto-completes, so I click on it. And as most people, I would click on the very first link because that's what I usually do. But in this case, I don't get pictures of Flintstones. Instead, I get a warning saying that my system is infected. Okay, since Google says so, I must check out what's going on. And now I see that my C drive is infected, my D drive is infected. Gives me the option to protect my PC, which clearly is the recommended option. But it doesn't matter what you do. You get a little download box there, which lets you save and install it. Right now, fortunately, I didn't fall for this trick because my computer has only one drive, so there clearly cannot be a D drive, and therefore it must be fake. So this kind of malware is popularly termed as scareware because it tends to scare users into installing the malware. And is this really a problem? Well, you saw that I didn't search for Viagra or something shady. I just searched for something pretty benign, and I ended up with the very first result being infected. And I'll show later in the talk that nearly 40% of all the popular keywords were at one point infected with these malicious links. If you search for something popular, like say anything related to Justin Bieber, you're very likely to get infected. And how bad is the problem? Well, it turns out that last year, scareware fraud cost over $150 million. You know? But how do people lose money in this business? Okay, here's the interesting part. So once you download this piece of software, it sits there in your taskbar blinking, and after a couple of weeks, it pops up a warning saying, you should upgrade to the full version. Please pay us $50, and this warning will go away. Turns out a lot of people actually do fall for that. And here was something I found on Yahoo Answers where this poor soul happened to install this malware on his machine and paid $50 for it, and now he wants to upgrade to Vista and wants to make sure that his antivirus is compatible. So yeah, in fact, it turns out to be a pretty significant problem that people fall for. Okay, so what are my contributions in this space? Well, we came up with a couple of questions, a few questions that we wanted to answer, and can think of them as these. How do these search poisoning attacks work? How is it that attackers can get a random keyword up to the very top of the search results, whereas me, after multiple years, have not been able to get into the top 20 results? So in that sense, we examined a live search poisoning attack and detected nearly 5,000 compromised sites involved in this process. And what can we learn about these attacks? You know, from our analysis, we identified a bunch of features that are common to these attacks and that could potentially be used to defend against them. And the third point was, you know, how can you defend against them? And for that, we developed DSEO, the tool I shall describe later in this talk, which allowed us to detect live SEO attacks in progress. Okay, now let me give you a little cartoony example of how the search poisoning attack works. This is kind of a cartoon version of the screencast. So you have the user, who's the blue guy. Blue is good, red is bad. And he issues a search query to the search engine, something benign. The search engine returns a result, and you click on the result, which happens to be a compromised server. That compromised server takes you through a series of redirection servers. These are the redirection chains which were mentioned in the previous talk. And you finally reach the exploit server. Now, the exploit server is going to either try to compromise your browser looking for vulnerabilities or pop up one of these careware things and trick you into installing the malware. Okay. So in order to kind of understand how exactly these attacks work, we analyze and dissect one particular SEO attack. Right? And this was an attack that was live between August and October 2010. And there were nearly 5,000 compromised domains involved, with tens of thousands of compromised keywords and millions of pages generated. So one of the questions we had was, how are these servers compromised in the first place? Well, at least in this instance, all of the servers were running an open source software called OS Commerce. This is software which lets you manage a shopping cart. So if you have a site that's selling something, you need a shopping cart, and this is a good solution for that. Or maybe this is a solution for that. And the reason it's not good is that it's had unpatched vulnerabilities for multiple years. And it also, it's effectively a very low-hanging fruit. You just search for sites containing this software, and you can pretty much be guaranteed to get into it. And the additional carrot that the attackers have here is that since it's a shopping cart site, it's likely that your database has information related to credit card numbers or people's addresses, and so that's a greater incentive for you to compromise these sites. And the way you actually compromise the site is trivially simple. You just visit this URL, so admin/file manager, and you can bypass the login screen and can load any file you want onto the website. And this any file could even be a PHP file, say, which would let you execute any file you want on the web server. So what do they do once they get access to a machine? Well, one of the most common things we saw was this sort of a very fancy graphical PHP shell. It lets you add files, delete files, open a port on the server. It also has a little button there saying brute force. So it would try to attack your /etc/password file, thereby using your resources to crack your password. Very convenient. So in addition to this, once they have this, they also need to set up this SEO site, which kind of looks benign but is actually malicious. For that, they upload HTML templates, images to make users feel comfortable when they visit the site. And once they have this, they also need kind of a main script, which is going to actually perform this sort of page generation and redirection. And so they have a PHP script stored there to generate these pages, right? And this is an example of a URL that, the series of attacks that we looked at had URLs similar to this. Now you had some example.com, and there was a PHP file that was responsible for generating the content and displaying stuff. And you also had the keywords that were being poisoned involved in the URL. So in this case, the main script is page.php, and the argument Kobayashi arrested would tell you the keyword that is being poisoned. And what does the page look like when the web server parses the PHP and renders it? Kind of looks like a YouTube video. It looks pretty natural. And as soon as you mouse over the window and click on something, the redirects kick in. It's a JavaScript redirect which takes you to one of these careware sites and pops up saying that you're infected. Or in some cases, it could say that you don't have the Flash plugin required to play YouTube. Okay. So this is what the HTML generated by executing the PHP looks like. Now, typically, you don't get to see the PHP script, the source of the PHP script, because it gets executed by the server. But in this case, they are running on buggy software, which happens to also expose that. So fortunately for us, we are able to download the PHP script, which looks something like this. Unfortunately, it's obfuscated, so you can't really make the head or tail of it. But it's pretty straightforward obfuscation, where they just keep swapping different letters for things and then eval the whole thing to get the actual script. So we kind of reverse engineer the process, and this is what the main script originally looks like, or this is what a readable version would look like. I thought it was pretty well written and must be someone who knows to write code. And it does a bunch of interesting things. So the first thing that happens when you visit the page is it checks if you're a search engine crawler, right? It does this by either looking at your IP address to see if you're from the Google or the Microsoft or the Yahoo IP range. It also looks at your user agent string. And if you're a search crawler, it could have different behavior. In this case, they just log this information, I guess, for them to know how quickly they're being crawled. Then what it does is it uses the keywords it has in order to generate, to automatically generate content which looks relevant to the search engine. How does it do that? Well, it issues queries to Google and Bing. And from Google, it gets those little snippets you get when you search for something. This is the text related to these keywords. And it also issues a query to Bing and fetches images. So you kind of know what hackers prefer for text versus image search. And after this, they add links to other compromised sites in their network. So typically, these SEO attacks involve many compromised hosts, and each site is going to link to a bunch of other hosts in order to probably boost the page rank. And finally, for efficiency, they also cache the page so that the next time someone visits, or the next time they get crawled, they can just serve up the page without issuing all these queries. So what we noticed was that these compromised sites have a very dense link structure, right? And since I mentioned that they link to other compromised sites, we can just follow these links to detect these other compromised sites. So we recursively crawled this entire network of compromised sites, and we found a total of 5,000 domains that were linked together. And each site, on average, links to 200 other sites. And also, each site hosted 8,000 SEO pages. So that is 8,000 poisoned keywords. And in all, nearly 40 million pages were generated and hosted on compromised domains. Now, what kind of keywords were poisoned? Well, these 40 million pages essentially corresponded to 20,000 popular search terms. Where do attackers find these search terms? You've got Google Trends, which tells you what the 20 most popular terms of the day are. You also have Bing, which provides related searches. So when you issue a search query, it gives you a list of another 8 or 10 similar related queries which people might be interested in. So hackers go after these queries for a bunch of days, and they collect all this data. So it varies. It's very topical. It varies from Haiti earthquake, Senate elections, Halloween 2010, or anything related to Justin Bieber. And finally, what we found was nearly 95% of the Google Trends keywords were, in fact, in this set of poison keyword lists that these sites were taking care of. Okay, so as we saw, redirection is kind of a very popular concept in these attacks, and it's very commonly involved, commonly used. And in this particular attack, there were 3 redirection servers that were used. And by looking at the PHP source files, we were able to find the location of the log files on the redirection servers. Unfortunately, they were also publicly accessible, so we didn't have to break any laws to get the logs. And the logs mentioned the time at which a victim was redirected to an exploit site, and also the exploit URL which was fetched. I must confess, I kind of toyed with the idea of modifying the logging code to also involve other information about the victims, but I didn't think it would be a very good idea. So over the course of 10 weeks, we found nearly 100,000 victims had been redirected to the exploit domains. Now, one question here, which was also raised in the previous talk, is this sort of multiple redirections is a rather big, clear red flag. So why can't, say, search engines automatically detect this behavior and blacklist these sites? Well, there are a couple of reasons, because these sites also try to take evasive action. Like, one of the things is they try to cloak their behavior. So if the visit is coming from a search crawler, they would exhibit a different behavior. They'd show a benign page, whereas if it comes from a regular user, they would show a different page. Or in our case, they also required user interaction before anything happened. So simply visiting a page would give you a pretty nice page, but it's only once you move your mouse over a particular part of the page or you click on a part of the page that the redirection and the malicious things kick in. And instead of using simple HTTP redirects, they make use of JavaScript or Flash to do so. So the crawlers have to do additional work to determine if something fishy is happening. Okay, so what did we learn from the analysis of this attack, right? What are some of the prominent features in search poisoning attacks? First, we found that they have a very dense link structure, roughly 200 links to other sites in the same network. They do a lot of automatic generation of relevant pages. So they issue search queries to Bing and Google in order to generate these pages. And there's a large number of new pages that are created after a site gets compromised, right? And another thing we observed was that when an attacker compromises a bunch of sites, right after the compromise, you see a lot of new pages that are set up that look very similar to each other. So these sites have diverse behavior before the compromise, but similar content and behavior after. So these are some of the features you could think of using in order to detect search poisoning attacks. Unfortunately, not all of them are equally viable. So in order to find the dense link structure, you need to essentially crawl a lot of pages and get the full network out. And that's a pretty heavy process. Automatic generation of relevant pages, you can detect when such things are happening if you could monitor queries at Google and Bing to see when queries come from compromised sites. But that's also kind of difficult to do. So instead, what we do is we just look at the other two aspects, which is we look at sites, domains, which suddenly have a large number of new pages, new suspicious pages that are set up that look similar across a bunch of domains, right? So given that, the steps in our tool, DSEO, are the following. So first, we do something called a history-based filtering. So we select domains where we see a sudden influx of new pages that look different from what used to be hosted on these domains before. So this is probably the time at which they got compromised and then started exhibiting different behavior. Then we take all these suspicious domains and cluster them together based on similarity of the URL. So this suggests that these are all groups of domains that have been compromised and abused by the same attacker. And finally, we perform the similarity analysis across the different pages in a group to determine if these pages are similar, then they're likely to have been compromised sites. So here's a little infographic on how the process works. So we first take a sample of these web URLs, which contain trendy keywords. So this is an example of a web URL which has trendy keywords. And then we perform a history-based filtering, wherein we only pick those domains which have suddenly seen a new influx of new sites, new URLs. And once we do this, we perform our domain clustering. And this clustering is done based on URL features, so on lexical features of the URL. So we use features like the set of keywords that were present in these URLs, or the number of keywords, the separators used. These suggest groups of URLs which are probably being abused by the same attacker. So once we have this, we kind of perform a group analysis. So these, after clustering, we have groups of domains, some of which may be benign, some of which may be malicious. And what we figured was the malicious sites would all have similar behavior among the web pages. The web pages look similar, they follow a template, whereas the benign groups are more diverse. So one of the factors you could look at different aspects of web page similarity. You could look at the parse tree of the HTML, the depths of various fields. In our case, we took a simpler approach. We just looked at the number of URLs in a page. And the top graph shows you a benign group where you have a wide variance in the number of URLs present in a page. Whereas in a malicious group, they all follow the same template and so have a very sharp peak. And this lets us kind of narrow down the set of groups that might be malicious. And once we have a set of malicious groups, we use these URLs to generate a regular expression signature. And this can be used to match other similar domains which we have not seen yet. Since we are working with a sample, we don't get to see the entire set of URLs. So once we have this regular expression, we can generalize to other URLs not in our sample. What did we find? Well, we looked at a sample web graph from January 2011. It contained maybe a million URLs or so. And we found close to 1,000 domains and 15,000 URLs that were in fact malicious. And we examined them manually. And analysis of these results revealed a new search poisoning attack. So this was different from the one I had originally analyzed. And this attack was on compromised WordPress installations. and they used cloaking here to avoid detection. In fact, the cloaking used here was pretty complex. If you visited from a Mac, they would give you a Firefox update page. If you visited from Windows, they would give you a Flash update page and so on. So they were trying to tailor to different kinds of malware. And they also had a different link topology, though the way they linked to each other was kind of different. And there are more details in the paper regarding this. So once we had our regular expressions, we applied them to live search results to kind of see how effective are we at catching these malicious URLs. So we picked 120 keywords, 60 from Google Trends and 60 from attacker trends, I guess. And out of the 120 searches, we found 163 malicious URLs in the search results. So these were URLs which led to this fake scareware page getting popped up. And out of the 120 keywords, 43 of them were in fact infected. So that's a pretty large number of popular terms that have now been poisoned successfully by attackers. And the graph here kind of shows you in which page these malicious URLs lie. While a large number of them do come later in the pages, there are a significant number in the first couple of search result pages as well. Right. So that kind of brings us to the end of the talk. And I'd like to conclude by saying that malware and search poisoning and SEO are pretty big problems today. And in this work, we analyzed an ongoing scareware campaign and identified thousands of infected websites. We were able to identify a few prominent features in these attacks and use them to build our tool, DSEO. With the tool, we were able to get promising results in a partial data set obtained from Bing, and we were able to identify multiple live SEO attacks. And with that, I would like to end, and I'd like to thank you all. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Alpha Couch Tufts University. I have one simple question for you. It seems to me that you just told me how to defeat your strategy, because you just told me that you were utilizing clustering over a relatively large scale, and I can beat you by sparsity. If I do that, do you have any fallback mechanisms for detecting this kind of behavior?
So one of the things that is necessary for the attack to work is to have relevant keywords in the search URLs, and that kind of helps us narrow down drastically the set of probably malicious domains. Now, if you're forced to take those out of your URL, you're not going to get ranked so highly up. So it kind of ties in very closely with the page rank or the search ranking algorithms. So by working with search engine providers, it's going to be easier to defeat these sorts of attacks, I feel. So I guess people could have figured, and the bad guys could have figured it out if we did this, but providing this information would probably help come up with better techniques.
Hi. Have you looked at any of this since January? I'm wondering, given that there's been a lot of activity in search engines and trying to root out low-quality content.
The data kind of ends. Our data collection ended in February, which was when my internship ended.
Okay.
And I have not looked at it since, but I believe things have definitely improved since then.
Thanks.
Hey, Christian Kreibig, nice work. I just had a quick technical question. You were saying that the HTML pages that the infected servers provide link to other infected pages.
Yes.
How do they maintain that list? Do they use the same trick that you guys used and just search for them and then present them, or is it something more
so simple? The set of other how do they find the set of other infected domains?
Yeah, exactly. How do they keep them up to date? Or
they have a file stored on the server which has the list of maybe 1,000 or 200 sites to link to.
Okay.
And that is updated whenever the set of domains changes. And each time you generate the page, it picks a random 20 links or 50 links from that.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Any way to like educate people not to be scared by scareware?
I have not come up with any valid mechanism to educate people. It feels like, at least the complaint seems to be, users will click on anything, so it doesn't really matter what you do, they are going to click. The best way is for you to not involve the user at all and try to get rid of these at the root.